KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in False Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonio Gonzalez. The New York State Education Department has rejected the Trump administration's demand that a ban on Native American mascots be reversed, challenging the federal government's interpretation of civil rights law. The New York Times reports that President Trump recently accused New York of illegal discrimination, condemning a state requirement that strips funding from school districts that appropriate Native culture in sports teams and other activities. Trump has shown support for parents in Massapequa, a community on Long Island's South Shore that protested a ban on the district's Chiefs logo and moniker. Trump then ordered New York to allow all school districts to choose their own mascots. But the state's education department shot back in a letter that the Trump administration's determination was based on, quote, internally inconsistent arguments. The ban has been in place for 2 years and follows many tribes' complaints that Native mascots are derogatory, inaccurate, and harmful. New York schools also rebuked the White House when it demanded that diversity, equity, and inclusion programs be ceased or face defunding. The New York Education Department's letter also questioned the Trump administration's involvement in a state issue, adding that a federal court in Brooklyn had previously rejected challenges to the Native mascot ban. Last week, the Interior Department announced more than $119 million meant to aid communities reclaiming abandoned coal mines, part of President Trump's agenda to achieve American energy dominance. As KJZZ's Gabriel Piatarazzo reports, two tribes were named as grant recipients.
The Navajo Nation and Crow Tribe of Montana are among 24 coal-producing states getting federal dollars, including Wyoming, Utah, Colorado, and New Mexico. Despite diversifying and transitioning to some sources of renewable energy, like solar, the Navajo Nation still heavily depends on coal to fuel its economy. Four Corners Power Plant solely relies on coal coming from the Navajo mine in New Mexico. It produces almost 5 million tons of coal annually, generating over a third of the tribe's general fund. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Piatarazzo.
A new species of bacteria that conducts electricity has been found on the Oregon coast. Scientists have named it for the Native Americans who historically lived there. The bacteria was found in a mudflat in the Aquinnah Bay estuary and has been deemed Coya conensis. The original people's descendants are now part of the Confederated Tribes of Siletz Indians, who helped the researchers come up with the name. Chang Lee was a postdoctoral researcher at Oregon State University during the research. The rod-shaped cells that make up this form of cable bacteria have filaments that have electrical conductivity that help optimize their metabolic processes in the muck.
The cable bacteria are able to oxidize sulfide and channeling the electrons along themselves, conducting like wires, and then go to the surface of the sediment and reduce oxygen, kind of connecting the two parts together by using electrical current. So that's why I think it's super cool, and then they're ecologically important to the environment.
Lee says it's important to honor the original inhabitants of the land where this bacteria was found.
So I think that history, it's really rich, and it should be preserved and telling people what had happened. And I think it's especially more important nowadays because we're facing some unforeseen drawbacks on diversity, equity, and inclusiveness.
The findings are published in the journal Applied and Environmental Microbiology. This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by Sanofsky Chambers Law, championing tribal sovereignty and Native American rights since 1976, from opioids litigation to treaty rights to tribal self-governance, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska. Sanofsky Chambers Law.
Support by the Arctic Encounter Symposium, North America's largest Arctic policy event at the Denaina Convention Center and Anchorage Museum, July 30th to August 1st in Anchorage, Alaska. Registration for this global conversation at arcticencounter.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
And it's just the same idea of punishing the immigrant and punishing their families and creating fear and distress upon everybody.
Immigration attorneys question a move to hold detainees from out of state in Alaska. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, June 9th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, loved ones remember the prominent bird researcher killed in a helicopter crash on the North Slope.
I want people to know that he made a difference in the lives of the people that he worked with, you know, his friends and family, and also the birds that now have a better chance at survival because of him.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Public media is about you, the community we serve. Thank you for tuning in.
Make your impact at the University of Alaska Anchorage. UAA is a leading workforce provider offering you a path to the career you want, with over 100 academic programs for you to choose from, an array of in-person, online, and hybrid course options, and resources to help you succeed on your journey. UAA is what you're looking for. Apply today. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
The Alaska Department of Corrections, which handles the state's jails and prisons, has taken in 40 people who were detained outside of the state by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. The move comes amid a national crackdown on immigration by the Trump administration. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early reports.
Alaska Deputy DOC Commissioner April Wilkerson said in a statement that all 40 of the detainees are men, and they were taken in under a, quote, existing contract for federal detainees. Wilkerson says the state is being reimbursed about $220 per man per day, and DOC anticipates the men will be held in the state for about a month. She says the state's prison population is at about 83% bed capacity as of Monday. Wilkerson declined to answer additional questions, including what facilities the men are being held at and where they were originally detained. Anchorage-based immigration attorney Nicholas Alano calls the move unusual and says he hasn't seen transfers like this in his decade as a lawyer in Alaska.
This is like sending people, I think, almost like trying to send them to El Salvador, to some far remote. And it's just the same idea of punishing the immigrant and punishing their families and creating fear and distress upon everybody.
Alano says he's been made aware that at least some of the detainees are being held at the Anchorage Correctional Complex. He says the conditions are very poor at the Alaska facilities, and detainees aren't able to leave their cell for very long or go outside.
The food is terrible, and the medical attention is subpar. This is different, and I'm not saying that it's a great camp, but my understanding and what the clients have told me, the treatment, the food, the space in the facilities are much better in Tacoma.
He's referring to the next closest ICE facility in Washington State. He says Alaska also has a shortage of interpreters. He says he's been contacted by the attorney of one of the detainees who has moved to Alaska, but as of Monday afternoon, he was not representing any of the 40 men.
I'm going to find out what we can do for him, try to get in contact with these other people, and just pass out the information that we are going to try to help and see what we can do.
A regional spokesman for ICE did not immediately respond to a request for comment. As of the end of May, 11 people in Alaska have been detained by ICE officials. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Alaska's fishing industry and environmental groups don't always agree, but last week they were on the same side, both warning that recent cuts to federal fisheries science could jeopardize Alaska's oceans. The North Pacific Fishery Management Council, which helps set fishing rules in federal waters, opened its meeting Thursday in Oregon. According to officials there from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the Alaska Science Center has lost more than 50 staff since February. Bob Foy directs NOAA's science operations in Alaska. He told the council that his agency is just trying to stay afloat.
You can't lose 51 people and not have that impact our ability to provide our products in a meaningful and a timely way.
The cuts are the work of the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, a Trump initiative whose stated goal is eliminating waste in government programs. The effort has been marked by confusion and controversy since its inception in January. Groups on both sides of the fishing debate say DOJA's damage is real and growing. Ben Intignap is a senior scientist with the conservation group Oceana. He says the losses are weakening NOAA's ability to manage fish stocks and protect sensitive ecosystems.
And we really need a fully funded NOAA fisheries program so that we can all come together and make sure that we have sustainable fisheries.
The Federal Fisheries Observer Program is also getting attention. Observers are trained scientists who ride on commercial fishing boats, collecting data on fish stocks, bycatch, and compliance. Despite a sometimes adversarial relationship with observers, many fishermen have spoken out in support of the Observer Program since it became threatened earlier this year. Chris Woodley heads the trade group Groundfish Forum, which represents Bering Sea trawlers. He called the program the backbone of the North Pacific fisheries and warned that cuts could hurt Alaska's commercial sector.
Without observers, there are no fish and there is no revenue.
The council is expected to continue the discussion at its next meeting in October. Investigators are still looking into what caused a fatal helicopter crash on the North Slope last week that killed two people. As Aliona Nyden with the Alaska Desk reports, the victims were an experienced pilot and a longtime conservation scientist.
Authorities have not publicly confirmed the identities of the pilot and passenger who died in Wednesday's helicopter crash near Dead Horse. But family, friends, and colleagues have been remembering the victims. Shyla Schulte was a shorebird scientist who worked at Monomet Conservation Sciences, which is based in Massachusetts. The company and his family confirmed he was a passenger on the flight. Schulte visited Alaska to study the declining population of whimbrels. This year, he was planning to deploy audio recorders in several locations on the North Slope to monitor their activity. Jonah Schulte is his brother.
Shiloh was doing exactly what he loves when all this happened, out in the field in one of the most remote and beautiful places I think that, you know, he's ever been, and he's been to quite a few places. And he always has talked about how amazing and impressive Alaska is.
Schulte lived in Maine, where he worked to help the recovery of beach nesting birds along the Atlantic and Gulf coasts, according to a statement from Manomet. His research took him across the country and internationally. His brother says Schulte was also involved in local government. He was a runner and a father of two daughters.
I want people to know that he made a difference in the lives of the people that he worked with, you know, his friends and family, and also the birds that now have a better chance at survival because of him.
The helicopter pilot was Jonathan Guibas, according to his family. Family and friends say Guibas moved to Alaska earlier this spring to work for Wasilla-based Pollux Aviation, which operated the flight. Before that, he worked as a flight instructor in Virginia. Raf Collado, a friend from Virginia, learned to fly helicopters from Guibas. He says Guibas was an outstanding pilot and wanted to move to Alaska for a long time.
He was really excited about working there. It was like, you know, a dream come true for him.
Arlene Guibas is Jonathan's mother. She says her son called her every other day. And he surprised her on her most recent birthday with a visit and a pair of hiking poles so they could enjoy easy hikes together. She says her whole world came crashing down when she learned of his death.
He impacted way more lives than I could ever imagine. And I'm incredibly proud of him. And all I can say is when I grow up, I want to be more like him. And I'm 75.
The National Transportation Safety Board completed the on-scene investigation of the wreckage on Friday. Weather prevented them from transporting the helicopter to Dead Horse last week. The agency hoped to bring the aircraft there Monday to continue examination. In Anchorage, I'm Aliona Nyden.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, veterans in Fairbanks protest President Trump's policies on the 81st anniversary of D-Day.
Today, the current administration is blatantly ignoring the Constitution we promised to defend.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
It doesn't matter what you were wearing, what you were drinking, or what you agreed to in the past. Sexual assault is never your fault. Support is available 24/7 through multiple resources. Visit notaloneak.org to find help for yourself or a loved one. Remember, it's not your fault. This message sponsored by the Alaska Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
The Skagway Borough Assembly accepted Mayor Sam Bass's resignation on Thursday. Bass resigned over a matter of conscience after legislation passed that required his signature on all official documents. For now, an assembly member was appointed mayor pro tem to fulfill the mayor's duties. KHNS's Melinda Munson has been following the issue and has this report.
There wasn't much discussion when the Skagway Borough Assembly voted to accept Mayor Sam Bass's resignation. Mostly, assembly members and residents thanked him for his service. Here's resident Lynn Davison.
I applaud his efforts to speak in a voice that was representative of the entire community. To many of us, he epitomizes all that is good about our town: tolerance, courtesy, decency, courage, and inclusiveness.
But Bass wasn't at the meeting to hear the gratitude, and the months leading up to the resignation have been heated and filled with frustration. It all started in March when Bass declined to sign three correspondence letters that the assembly approved. The letters were in support of local National Park Service employees, expressed concern about tariffs with Canada, and reiterated friendship with the Yukon. Local code requires the mayor's signature on official documents, but it didn't specifically list correspondence as official documents. Past mayors have signed correspondence, but Bass wanted the assembly to sign its own letters. He often spoke about maintaining a separate voice for the mayor.
And I feel that the mayor is not a member of the assembly. The mayor is a separate part, executive branch of the government. With that comes special responsibilities and considerations.
While Bass had some support, the assembly and many community members who testified felt the mayor was not doing his job. This is former Mayor Andrew Cremata back in March.
You are one governing body, and I feel like I'm here now two meetings in a row not talking about things that are really important to me, like the port and rock slides, and talking about this governing body acting like a body.
The assembly came back with an ordinance that clarified that correspondence was defined as an official document. It also gave the assembly the option of appointing a mayor pro tem in the event that the mayor was unwilling or unable to perform their duties. Bass vetoed the ordinance twice. His veto was overturned both times. He resigned after the second veto was rejected. Vice Mayor Deb Potter currently serves as the mayor pro tem. The assembly must appoint a new mayor to fill the spot until the next election in the fall. Potter has stated she is not interested in permanently filling the position. In Skagway, I'm Melinda Munson.
Dozens of Juneau residents in the glacial outburst flood zone filed into the Mendenhall Valley Library on Saturday afternoon to learn how to prepare for flooding expected later this summer. Members of the Juneau Lions Club walked residents through the new flood map website made by the University of Alaska Southeast researchers and handed out weather alert radios. Local insurance providers talked about how FEMA's National Flood Insurance Program works. The program is still operating, but that might change given the Trump administration's past statements about weakening the agency. Reuben Willis, a State Farm insurance agent in Juneau, explained that the price for federal flood insurance is based on FEMA's risk zone maps, last updated in 2020. He recommended that homeowners lock in lower pricing before FEMA updates Juneau's maps again.
If they change your zone and put you in a higher risk zone, which would allow them to require us to charge a higher premium, if you purchase the policy, you're grandfathered in.
He says that if homeowners with federal flood policies sell their place in the future, that grandfathered price transfers to the new owners. A new policy takes 30 days to go into effect, so Willis says Mendenhall Valley homeowners should consider applying now to protect their assets from potential flooding this year. Catastrophic floods hit neighborhoods during the first week of August the past 2 years. Laird Jones has lived in the valley since 1982. His place is on Skywood Lane near the library. He says his home was spared during last year's record-breaking 16-foot flood, but that could change if a future flood breaches 17 feet. Last year, he watched the water level rise too close for comfort.
The ditch was full of water, and we had a salmon swimming by in the ditch.
He says FEMA maps put his home in one of the lower risk zones, so when he got a quote for flood insurance, it was just under $360 per year. Insurance providers say that's the base price for the program, but it can be around $2,000 for those in higher risk zones. In a parking lot nearby, staff from the city and Tlingit and Haida, along with a handful of volunteers, filled free sandbags for residents to stack against their homes. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers donated the bags, and the city and tribe split the cost of the sand evenly. Another sandbag event will take place on June 14th. The largest timber companies operating in Southeast Alaska want the Tongass National Forest to sell them more old-growth timber, and they're suing the federal government to get it. The Department of Justice asked the court to throw the case out in May. KTOO's Alex Solomon reports.
The Alaska Forest Association, along with two of its members, Viking Lumber and Alcan Timber, filed a lawsuit in March, alleging that the U.S. Department of Agriculture failed to fulfill a promise to supply the companies with enough timber to meet market demand. But the government filed a motion to dismiss the case, saying it didn't promise that. The case comes after President Trump issued two executive orders aimed at expanding logging in the Tongass this March, and follows decades of legal disputes over Tongass timber. Frank Garrison is the timber industry's attorney. He says that the industry has faced a 30-year decline and that Viking and Alcan are struggling.
They're on the brink of collapse.
He says the companies rely almost completely on old-growth timber offered by the Tongass National Forest. The government argues in the motion that it is only required to seek to provide enough timber to meet market demand while balancing other forest uses and ensuring their sustainability. In other words, the DOJ says the agency is not legally required to provide a specific amount of timber to companies. The DOJ also writes in the motion that the timber sale objectives in its latest management plan are aspirational goals, not binding commitments that can be challenged in court. And the plaintiffs don't point to a specific agency action or rule that has been violated. But Garrison says that the management plan gave timber companies an expectation that they would have roughly 15 years to transition business from old growth to new growth and provided estimated amounts of old growth timber that they could expect to buy.
The timber industry, including our clients, relied on the management plan, you know, when they were figuring out how they were going to run their business for the next decade.
Garrison says the Forest Service abandoned its commitment to a slow transition when it proposed to end old-growth logging in 2021. The Forest Service has not met its annual target for timber sales in Alaska in a decade, according to a federal report published last year. Nonprofit environmental law firm Earth Justice is representing a group that seeks to intervene in the case. It includes two tribes, a boat tour company, a fishermen's association, and environmental groups. Attorney Kate Glover agrees with the DOJ that the case should be thrown out because the industry hasn't challenged a specific agency action. Instead, she says timber companies are looking for a wholesale policy change.
The timber industry plaintiffs are asking the court essentially to order the region to take a step backwards, to go back to a long-gone era of large timber sales, large clear cuts, where we make that the priority for the use of old-growth forests.
Joel Jackson is president of the Organized Village of Cake, a tribe based on Kupernov Island that's represented by Earth Justice. He says the forest's health is vital to the health of salmon, and since heavy logging moved out, the tribe's food security has improved. Jackson does not want to see old-growth logging scale back up. Instead, he wants the old growth to be preserved for future generations to experience it as he has.
It's like walking into one of the most beautiful cathedrals you could ever walk into anywhere in the world.
The tourism industry brings in significantly more money to Southeast Alaska than the timber industry. Jackson says the two are at odds because visitors come to see one of the last protected temperate rainforests in the world, not clear-cut logging in the mountains. Maggie Rabb is the executive director of the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, one of the environmental groups trying to intervene in the case. She says the timber industry's demands are out of line with what most Southeast Alaskans want for the Tongass.
They want nuanced, science-based, responsive management, and that does not look like one logging company telling the Forest Service how much they need and letting that drive decisions about how we manage our forests.
The USDA, DOJ, and Forest Service declined to comment. The timber industry must file a response to the DOJ's motion to dismiss this case by June 24. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
GCI, keeping schools and students connected across the state with a resilient and redundant network. Details at gci.com/education.
Make your impact at the University of Alaska Anchorage. UAA is a leading workforce provider offering you a path to the career you want, with over 100 academic programs for you to choose from, an array of in-person, online, and hybrid course options, and resources to help you succeed on your journey. UAA is what you're looking for. Apply today. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
Public media is about you, the community we serve. Thank you for tuning in.
The Alaska Board of Education unanimously approved new reading standards for Alaska Native languages last week. That means students from kindergarten to third grade can have their reading skills evaluated in an Alaska Native language instead of in English. KTOO's Jamie Deep has more.
The new standards are broader than the state's current reading standards. This allows schools to fit the standards to their cultural and linguistic needs. The standards recognize students can achieve literacy in state languages other than English. Jamie Shanley is the Assistant Director of Education with the Alaska Heritage Institute, a nonprofit tribal organization that helped create the standards last year. She says the standards give students learning an Alaska Native language another option to meet reading requirements set by the Alaska Reads Act. But it was a challenge to create the standards.
That was a really hard clashing of two worlds, a Western ideal of education with this standards-based system and an Indigenous worldview. And so this group really had a beautiful way of meshing those two things.
She says the standards aren't meant to dictate reading in one of the state's 23 official Alaska Native languages in a confined way. The standards also define reading differently. Shken George is one of the owners of Teaching Indigenous Design for Every Student, an education consulting group. She says Alaska Native cultures do read, even if there wasn't historically a written language.
Reading is looking at things and gathering information. And so we really talked a lot about how we have been reading things this whole time, you know. And so we really had these deep discussions about reading the weather and reading our environment and reading our regalia and our art.
There are Alaska Native language programs in schools all around the state, including the Tlingit Culture, Language, and Literacy School in Juneau. Several educators from TCLL helped to form the standards. Principal Molly Yerkes says the school already uses elements of the new standards and that they will help schools take the next steps to develop ways to assess reading in Alaska Native languages.
In Alaska, every community has to develop their own. It's not like something you can buy from Texas and McDougall Littell. So I think this adoption of these standards will support the creation of quality materials.
Yerkes says the TCLL staff are working with researchers to develop assessments for Tlingit learners. Per Alaska Administrative Code, regulations typically take effect 30 days after they are filed by the Lieutenant Governor. In Juneau, I'm Jamie Deep.
The Nikolsky School on Umnak Island in the Western Aleutians wrapped up its first school year last month following a decade-long closure. KUCB's Sophia Stewart-Rossi reports.
Superintendent Mike Hanley calls the inaugural year incredibly successful. Students returned to the one-room schoolhouse this year for the first time since the school shut down in 2009 due to low student enrollment. Hanley says, quote, "Our kids made a great transition from a homeschool model to a model that required a bit more consistency and discipline," end quote. Lynette Hall teaches all ages at the school and has renewed her contract for another year. She says the community welcomed her and praised her students' positive attitudes. Hall describes the students as having, quote, "eager sincerity, open camaraderie with each other, utter respect for people of all ages, and their interest in learning," end quote. Teacher's aide Tatiana Hillhouse will also come back for the new school year. 10 students will return when the new school year begins August 27th, just before Labor Day. In Unalaska, I'm Sophia Stewart Rossi.
Last Friday marked 81 years since the Allied forces launched their invasion of Normandy, France during World War II. An annual observance among veterans groups in Fairbanks this year was a rally. KUAC's Robin reports.
Veterans protested cuts in health benefits and what they called breaking the law and defying the Constitution by the presidential administration. On the sunny evening in a green park fronting the Chena River, veterans stepped up to a microphone to speak. Violetta Knight comes from a family of service members.
When I joined the United States Army, I raised my right hand and promised to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Today, the current administration is blatantly ignoring the Constitution we promised to defend.
Jeannie Olson talked about how her ancestor, Sylvanus Thayer, was credited with reforming West Point Academy with values of military excellence. But she's worried about the defense secretary's recent order to remove books and clubs on race and culture from the academy, which ended two classes in mid-semester and had the academy scrubbing websites.
Now, as I'm sure most of you know, there's the elimination of a lot of stories in history, and our upcoming officers aren't learning the history of America like they should.
Behind about 50 people listening on the grass was a group holding a long banner that read, "No Fascism."
True patriots who came before us, like the ones on June 6, 1944, stood up and kicked fascism's ass once, and we owe it to them and to those who come after us to do it again.
Phil Drum was in the Air Force for 20 years. He recounted a long list of how federal officials are testing their constitutional power. Alaska House Republican Representative Will Stapp served 4 years in the Army and was invited to the rally as a veteran. He came to answer constituent questions.
So people asked me if I would come by and see what was going on, so I said, sure. I'm sure people have questions, you know. And I try to go to all the veterans' events, even when we have political disagreements, but try to go up and see how folks are doing, especially here in Fairbanks.
Stapp wasn't able to stay through all the speeches. When the speeches were over, the group walked across the river on a pedestrian bridge and back on the main drive, holding U.S., Ukraine, and Taiwanese flags, as well as POW and Veterans for Peace banners. Mary Bishop held a sign that said, "Country over party."
I'm a registered Republican. I expect to stay that way, but I'm a never-Trump Republican. He's destroying the party.
Her husband, Dick Bishop, carried a sign that said, "No autocracy."
I favored the Republicans in the last few decades, but it's no longer the Republican Party that it was. It's the Trump Party, and I can't support it. So I'm not contributing to the Republican Party other than with criticism.
A group of volunteers kept a barbecue going with hot dogs and collected more than $600 for Fairbanks North Scarborough School District's nutrition services to apply to school lunch debt for next year. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Wesley Early and Ilona Niden in Anchorage, Theo Greenlee in Portland, Alex Solomon and Jamie Deep in Juneau, Melinda Munson in Skagway, Sophia Stewart Rossi in Unalaska, and Robin in Fairbanks. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky's our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo, providing cargo transportation to 9 Alaska communities. NAC offers options including cargo charters to get freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
ConocoPhillips Alaska, building the next generation of Alaska's workforce through investments in education and vocational training. ConocoPhillips Alaska, committed to Alaska for more than 50 years.
Thanks for listening today. We love being a part of your media mix. Tune in every day to catch the best in statewide news and programming. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media. Whoa, whoa. Whoa, whoa. Yeah. Hey. Wow.
muchas noches pensándote. Yo no sé ni cómo ni cuándo fue, pero solo sé que yo recordé cómo te lo hacía y aquí ya ves. Si yo no puedo seguir solo, pero sé que te boté de mi vida, te boté.
Lo meto para recordar un TBT, yeah. Ya yo me cansé de tu mentira, ahora hay una más dura que me tira. Todo tiene su final, todo expira. Tú eres pasado y el pasado nunca vira. Arranca pa'l carajo, mi cuerpo no te necesita. Lo que pide es un perreo sucio en la placita. No creo que lo nuestro se repita. Yo le prendo un fill y deja una ready pa' ahorita, yeah.
Me siento bien, ya no sufro por amores, ahora rompo corazón y sobran las pacas de 100. Tú me rompiste el corazón, sin sentido y sin razón. Pero tengo un c*** nuevo que me da mucho cariño y me cae mi fin.
No te lo voy a negar que te sufrí, la pasé mal, pero te superé.
Si me fallaste, te burlaste de mí y me humillaste. Lejos de aquí te fuiste y ni explicaste. Viste mi película y viraste. Ahora quieres saber lo que pienso de ti. Me siento porque no estás aquí. Así como viniste, tú te puedes ir. No te voy a negar que te sufrí, la pasé mal, pero me superé y de mi vida te boté.
Pidiéndome que te agarre bien duro en la cama y te haga mi mujer. Aprovecho el ritmo y con gozo para mandarte pa'l carajo también. No quiero mentira ni tu falsedad. Me voy pa' la calle esta noche a rumbear. Me bebo dos tragos y te voy a olvidar. Me voy con la baby que quiera jugar.
Yo te boté.
Bye.
side like to get your lane. I switch up my car if I kill any pain. Look what you got.
Making Hi. Pong. This is Dmitry Filimonov, President and CEO of the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association.
The Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association is hosting a virtual dementia tour on June 12th at the Old School in King Cove. The virtual dementia tour is an interactive personal experience providing insight on what day-to-day life is like for a person living with Alzheimer's and related dementia. This free event is from 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. and 25-minute slots are available and open to everyone. Space is limited and you can sign up with Rebecca Newman at 907-497-2769 or for more information, contact Lorraine Thomas at lorrainet@apiai.org, or you could find a flyer in your community with the link to sign up.
Remember, if you are in Anchorage, please come visit the Unangamulla, home of the Aleuts. Unangam, Atakan, Akun, we are one.
Maybe I'ma get a little shy, cause everybody's trying to be famous, and I'm just trying to find a place to hide. All I wanna do is just hold somebody, but no one ever wants to get to know somebody. I don't even know how to explain this, I don't even think I'm gonna try. Get a little nervous. Maybe I don't go out anymore. Feeling like I really don't deserve this. Life ain't nothing like it was before. Cause all I wanna do is just hold somebody, but no one ever wants to get to know somebody. If you go and look under the surface, maybe I'm a little insecure.
Maybe that's okay.
Maybe that's okay. Trying to be famous, and I'm just trying to find a place to hide.
I'ma tell them all. I'ma tell.